This is KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. I'm Father Ian Dellinger, and I'm serving up a triple portion of Playing with Food for you this holiday season, and it's all about barbecue. Almost a quarter of a century ago, a hero was created, not in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but on PBS television. And he's a food hero, specifically a barbecue hero, and he became a hero by playing with food and becoming an expert. His current TV show is Stephen Reichlin's Project Fire. That was preceded by Project Smoke, and before that was Primal Grill. But it all started with a show called Barbecue University. BBQU is now a real, live, in-person event, and I had the pleasure and honor of meeting the legend himself. I arrived on the last day of BBQU at Ellisol Ranch outside of Solvang, California, very early to meet Stephen, who was getting ready for his last class of this year's BBQU. We greeted, and then he dived into teaching.
Good morning.
Hi, I'm Father Ian.
Hello. Hey, Father Ian.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
So nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Wow. I expected you to sort of come sort of pastoral with the white thing. And
Not when it's going to be 108.
Okay. Is that what it's going to be today?
Yeah.
Good morning, everybody. We have a busy day today. We have a very exciting day. But it starts off kind of as a sad day because this is the last day we're going to spend together this year. You've been an amazing class. And we have a new guest today. It is Father Ian, would you raise your hand, who is a NPR reporter. We're going to be on NPR, which is going to be super exciting. Plus, we got the big guy looking down on us today, so that'll be a good thing. And the theme of today's class is Global Tailgate. First of all, we are going to have a grilled breakfast dish. Grilled eggs. Sounds impossible, but you will see it here. We're going to follow that with a Thai grilled beef salad. Fire Eater Lamb Chops. Next, Pan Banyat. Now this is a sandwich from Provence. Traditionally it's made with canned tuna, and I thought we would kind of up the ante today by making it with grilled fresh tuna. Then we have beer can chicken. I did not actually invent beer can chicken, but I did popularize it. And the beer can chicken book came out, I think, in 2004, something like that. Right book at the right time. And much as my wife thinks this dish is silly, it did build our house in Martha's Vineyard, so. We like beer can chicken. Best beans on the planet, baked beans made with three different kinds of beans and smoke grilled. And finally for dessert, peppered pineapple with mezcal whipped cream. Okay, so that's the menu today. We're going to end a little early today because we do have the final exam, and hopefully everybody will pass that, and then we have a little diploma ceremony. So, ladies and gentlemen, fire up your grills.
This class is completely hands-on. There are teams of six students who have a full eight-dish meal to make, all of it on the barbecue. The Playing with Food team followed the students throughout their third and final day.
I'm Bernie Greenspan. We just love barbecuing. We've been looking for something like this. This thing showed up last year. We registered in November to assure that we'd have a place in it. This has been far more than we would have imagined.
How does the day work?
Stephen will talk for about an hour or so, telling us what the recipes are. He demonstrates some of them, certain techniques or something. Yesterday it was trussing the chicken that we were cooking on a spit. Then he sets us loose for about 2 hours to cook eight recipes. We're in teams of six people. It's not a competition, but we have to figure out how we're going to get it all done in those 2 hours, plate the food, garnish it, and then he comes around and comments on it, our presentations. Then we bring it all over to the picnic area and we enjoy a feast. But while we're cooking, he comes around and helps us with each of the things we're doing. If we're stuck on something or just a better way to do it, the staff of Ellisol comes by, their head chef is here. He's come by to me a couple of times. Yesterday gave me some really good pointers on some vegetables I was trying to saute and get that done quickly. It's just been magnificent. You don't get to work close to expert chefs in regular life, right? And this has just been fantastic. It's really intense getting it done and exhausting, but exhilarating at the same time.
Have you learned anything?
Yeah, we've learned just different techniques about using maybe the equipment we already have, building fires with different zones, some interesting recipes, a recipe to make flatbread straight on the grill, which is something I've always wanted to try to do, and probably even more than I haven't even filtered through in my head yet.
And has there been a lot of good food?
Excellent food. Yeah, we get to eat what we cook. We cook enough food for an army here.
What are you hoping to accomplish in your last day here?
I want to cement some friendships with the people that I've met here because we sort of bonded with strangers just over cooking.
And what's one technique that you're going to take home with you?
Not having like all the coals in the same place. He talked about having like a really hot side and then a medium and a cooler side, so that you can move things around a little better and have better control over the cooking.
John Randall, I grew up in rural Indiana, and all we had was broadcast television for a number of years. One of them was Steve and his barbecue. And we've been saying for I don't know how many years that we need to come out and actually take the course. It'd be so delicious to try that food. It looks amazing on television. It'd be how much better just to be there and try it. So we finally said this year, hey, we're gonna do it.
And what have you learned in the days that you've been here?
A lot about controlling your fire. Steve's put it best. It's this tightrope where you want to keep the heat to the point that it nearly burns the food, but you're not doing that. You're not crossing the line. Getting that perfect char is what really adds that flavor and texture that elevates to the next level.
What's the best technique that you're going to take home with you?
Everything's a little bit better with some char.
John Doyle from Raleigh, North Carolina.
You came a long way for this.
Yes, it was a 40th birthday present from my wife.
Well, happy birthday.
Yes, thank you.
Are you enjoying it?
Oh, loving it.
So what's the best technique you're going to take home with you?
I like the open fire grill. They call it caveman style grilling, where basically you put the vegetables or the meat directly on the coals. I'd never done that before. And we did it yesterday. Came out really, really good.
Stephen told me that peppers and eggplant are really good for doing it this way because they char on the outside, and so it smokes the flesh inside. But those two are best for doing it this way.
When you grill fish, do you ever worry that you're going to overcook it or undercook
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't really like doing seafood because I'm just not very good at it. And there's a very small margin of error. If I leave it on there too long, just slightly too long, it's just too dry. But, you know, tuna's a lot like regular steak, so you can cook it. And it's one of those where if you take it off early, it's still really good.
You're already on desserts. Are you familiar with barbecuing desserts?
No, this is probably my first time, but we're just prepping it.
And we won't grill it until just before we serve it.
So you did a dessert yesterday, though.
It was great. It was the rhubarb crumble, and it was excellent.
And is that a new technique that you'll take home with you?
Yes. I have to buy a cast iron skillet.
You don't have to do that, actually. I'm not teaching this class. You can do it in an aluminum foil pan. You got to make sure, though, that it's not too hot underneath, obviously.
Right.
Or an old pan that you don't like. Steve's going to hear that, and he's going to fire me. He's going to fire me for taking over his class.
This is KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. I'm Father Ian Dellinger, and I'm at Barbecue University at Alisal Ranch in the San Ynez Valley. The students are preparing 8 dishes, all of them on the barbecue. There was so much learning by doing going on and a lot of excitement, and some people were rookies.
My name is Rosemary Tobin. I'm from Wainimi Beach, California, which is in Ventura County.
What one skill are you going to take home with you?
The recipes. That's really what I'm taking home with.
My cousin said when we get home, we have to cook for them. So we're going to just take the ones we like the best and cook them.
Which were?
There was a shrimp dish the other day that was absolutely out of this world. I'm waiting to taste the beans. I think I'd like to make those.
A pork meatball in lettuce that was an appetizer that was absolutely fabulous. Again, a Thai dish that was seasoned so perfectly.
So you came for the cookbook?
No, I came to learn how to barbecue. This is my first time ever barbecuing, really, except throwing chicken on my barbecue at home and charring it up till it's too cooked. So now I know some different ways to cook, what temperature you're supposed to take the food off at, how to serve it or how to make something better. Like this had sweet onions, but she decided to grill some of them on here, which was not part of the recipe, which makes the onions sweeter. It's just been a fabulous event.
What's your barbecue background?
Zero. I have no barbecue background. This is the first time I've ever done anything like this. It's amazing.
So you said you threw some chicken on the grill. Do you have a gas grill or charcoal grill?
I have a gas grill, a Weber.
Were you creative with the flavorings that you put on your chicken?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Marinate it and then cook the chicken until it gets to 165 degrees.
Okay. Boneless breast, bone-in breast, pieces, thighs.
Sometimes I do thighs with skin. Sometimes I do boneless breasts. Thighs are much juicier than the breasts.
This is a big leap then. So
yes,
how big of
yes.
a leap, like when you started on the first day, what was your heart doing?
It was a little bit overwhelmed with all the different grills and everything and learning what each one did. And then trying to decide when I get home what I'm gonna do, because all I have is, you know, a Weber turn on the gas thing. I'm gonna try some different things when I get home.
Do you have barbecuing experience, cousin?
Yes. Absolutely. Rosemary is here because I told her about this last year when I came. She says, oh, I want to go next year. So I let her know when the date is, and here we are, barbecuing together. And I guess pizza's been the hardest thing for me to do. But now that I've been here and learned more about it, I think I can do it. But I'm going to try it on that steel and then do it directly on the barbecue, as I've learned here. It's very good.
Okay.
I would love to be done in about 10 minutes. Does that seem realistic for everybody?
The students come from all over the country. At the end of each morning of learning and using new barbecue techniques, the students have to present their meal to the professor.
Is everybody ready now for presentation?
Not yet. Close.
How long?
Close.
How long?
5 minutes.
No. 2 minutes. 2 minutes. 2 minutes.
So is presentation part of this?
It is.
Not to throw any of them under the bus or anything, but I don't think I've ever seen a raw crown of broccoli as a garnish.
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Why is presentation part of Barbecue University?
You know, we eat with our eyes as well as our palates, and we want the food to look every bit as good as it tastes.
Double thick chops, some of them even triple thick chops. I like the generosity implied by that. Your salad looks beautiful. What's the name of this team again?
Phantoms of Flame.
The Phantoms of the Flame. Okay. Particularly awesome over at this group. I love the broccoli. That works for me. What this chicken tells me is that he fell off of his throne. Now, these guys have been sitting smug for about 15 minutes with their legs crossed on the bench saying, like, yeah, we finish earlier than everybody else. Super nice job over here. The salad looks amazing. Nice job on the chicken. Look how beautifully the pineapple is caramelized. We came up with that charred plant just kind of as a little garnish. Let's see who's ready over here. I love the skewered and grilled cherry tomatoes. That's a fun dish. Two versions of the dessert, so that looks really awesome as well. And one with peanuts. I like that. One thing that you learned when you were cutting up your skirt steak is we cut across the grain rather than with the grain. That's an important principle. I would say from the practical point of view, you have all passed, but you need to complete your oral exam first. So.
After all, this is university.
So, Richard, we have one method of live fire cooking, indirect grilling. Tell me a second method of live fire cooking.
Direct.
Congratulations, Richard. John Doyle.
Right here.
John, tell me a couple foods you would cook using the direct method.
Steak, vegetables, Santa Maria vegetables.
Okay. Congratulations. Bernie, when you are grilling fruit and it's going to be sugar crusted, when do you add the sugar?
At the end to glaze it.
Right, but right literally within 30 seconds. Because otherwise the sugar melts and we don't get a good caramelized crust. Congratulations, Bernie.
Thank you.
Where's James?
Right here.
Tell me some foods that you would cook caveman style.
Peppers and some big tomahawk steaks.
You got it. Where's Susie?
Over here.
So Susie, we need the fifth method of live fire cooking.
Spit rotisserie over the fire.
Congratulations, Susie.
Thank you.
Deb, there are three windows of opportunity for flavoring a food that we're going to grill or smoke. What is the first window of opportunity?
Marinade before.
When the food is raw. Congratulations.
Raw. Thank you.
Rosemary, cooking those thin skirt steaks. How do we know when they're done? We do what?
You can tap it.
We do the poke test.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, if not, did anyone not get a diploma?
Then it was time for me to taste some good food and chat with the new grads.
All right, I think I'm going to try some of this food.
Thai grilled beef salad. Take a piece of the meat and taste it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What's in the marinade? Okay, it's really delicious.
The marinade is cilantro, fresh ginger peeled, garlic, sugar, ground fresh pepper, Asian fish sauce, and fresh lime juice.
It's delicious. How was university?
Fantastic. Excellent.
Fabulous. What was the best part of it?
Eating all the food you get to make.
Building your confidence. Like Steve just says, there's no mistakes in the kitchen. It's all just happy accidents, right? Yeah. New recipes, new grills, new people. So it was great.
What was your favorite dish of all 3 days?
I like the Santa Maria tri-tip. I've only cooked it one other time and I thought it was great.
The pork meatballs, just the flavors, and it was just fabulous. I love eating dishes like that in lettuce. It was Thai flavoring. It was just delicious.
Thai chicken?
Yeah, just because normally chicken isn't such an exciting thing, but that was chicken in a whole different way.
I was digging the lamb chops, these tiny little lamb chops that were just perfectly, took like 2 minutes on the grill. Delicious.
I really didn't know what to expect, but I'm happily surprised that everything went so well. I was kind of scared because I'm picky about food. I was thinking, oh gosh, what if the food turns out bad? What if we ruin the brisket or the lamb or whatever? And then do we get a new one? Like, how is this going to go? Like, I had so much anxiety over it, kind of. And actually, I'm really surprised that it was really good. All the food. I don't think I ate anything that was bad.
The tedious part of cooking, like the cutting and prepping and the portioning, that was already done for us. So it, we kind of got through the tedious part of cooking. So just got to enjoy our time on the grills, actually doing the real cooking part. You know, when I looked at the recipes the night before, they all looked like so complicated. And then we got here and Stephen went through and, you know, showed us how to do a quick demonstration on each recipe. And then they just executed flawlessly, and all the food came out amazing.
Well, I didn't actually participate. This was my husband's birthday present, but I have been an expert taster this week, and it has been excellent. All the food has been delicious.
As a hanger-on, do you get to come to all the meals?
I have. I'm not sure.
She's like, I'm showing up and I'm going
to... You know, this is such a fun experience for him, and he was so excited to try out all the different grills and everything. So, like, I came just, like, right before judging. Yeah, came and tasted everything. So, it's been good.
What's your favorite dish?
I really liked the tri-tip the first day. I think that was my favorite.
I approve.
That was really good. Yeah. So good. They put it on the grill that had the fire underneath of it. I think it's called the Kudu Grill. Yeah, and then it had this amazing marinade. After he sliced it, he poured it on top, and it was fabulous. I've never had tri-tip ever, and we're in Santa Barbara. Had to try it, so of course they were gonna make it, and I really liked it. It was really, really, really tender and good.
Smart move.
Yeah, I don't want to be boring and say the tri-tip, but it was probably my favorite.
Good man.
I think it was
tri-tip.
Like the marinade overall favorite for everybody.
That's all the evidence I need that they had a successful barbecue. But further evidence that they got a lot out of it is what's next.
You get home, you get rested. Next weekend shows up. Yeah. What are you going to tell him to make?
Actually, my parents are keeping our kids back home, and my birthday's coming up in a couple weeks. And so my mom was like, okay, what is John making you for your birthday? And so I think we were going to go through like all 3 days and pick our favorites from each day. And then he was going to do like a big ol' party.
Okay.
Smart. Yeah.
So it's definitely going to be the tri-tip, probably the beans. That salad with the steak in it was really, really good today.
Yeah.
And then one of the desserts. I think our kids will love the s'mores brownies from the first day.
Yeah. Are you going to make the marshmallows?
Oh, man. Homemade marshmallows. Mm-hmm. I like to bake, so maybe that'll be my department. Yeah.
Next weekend?
I love lamb. I'm definitely going to do some racks of lamb, I think. I don't think I can get tri-tip in Ohio, but I'm gonna look for it and see what if I can find it anywhere. If I can, I will try.
She's saying the lamb because she crushed the lamb today. That's why she's saying
that's
lamb.
True. A lot of my friends don't like lamb, but I love lamb, so.
Probably the tri-tip or maybe the lamb chops.
Actually, the people coming over Saturday don't know that we've been here. We're debating between lamb chop recipe or tri-tip. But what I'm more than thinking about is, like, should I go get some cedar planks to present it on like we did?
Oh, yes.
And, you know, I mean, well, you know.
Grill your lemon.
Grill the lemon. Yeah, the orange or the lemon. They said put it on the grill till it turns black.
And that's Barbecue University, a fire filled playing with food. It was an amazing day for me, and no doubt an amazing 3 days for the students. You may have heard the person say that all the prep was done for them so they could focus on barbecuing and their techniques. So who does all of that? Who makes that happen? This is KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. I'm Father Ian Dellinger, and playing with food is a triple portion today. I've been at Barbecue University, which is led by PBS Television's barbecue sensation Stephen Reichlin, right here on the Central Coast at Alice Hall Ranch in the San Ynez Valley. So what does it take to put on Barbecue University? What is the playing with food and the other things behind the scenes so that the students can have a quality playing with food experience? I started the conversation with the person who got everyone to the event, the marketing manager at Alice Hall Ranch.
Leah Carhart, and I do marketing for Alice Hall Ranch.
How many times has it been here?
This is its second time here. We do barbecue events ourselves anywhere between 1 and 3 times a year. We do barbecue boot camp. So I think he might have seen other guest chefs here. He reached out. I think they were looking for a new home. It's just been a really good fit. Since I'm on the marketing side of things, for me, it's more about promotion, like getting it on the website, getting it through our different channels, social, digital, things like that. First one, we were selling it at least 6 months in advance. This one we had up and ready to sell almost a year in advance. It was really fun seeing these students who are so into it. It's almost like a cooking show. Like they're timed, they're moving around quickly. It's like, yes, chef. It was really fun to see. We'll bring in influencers and media for coverage. So I stop by and say hello and see how everyone's doing. I wish I could stay.
How quickly did people start to register? Because he's been doing this, like, this is like his 20th or something like that.
The first year, we went live with the link, and within like 48 hours, I think maybe there were 30 signups. It was like overnight. And he said I have a really strong following. People love this. I expected them to trickle in. We were shocked last year at how fast the signups were.
What's the experience once they get here? What does the package include?
The package includes, it's got their breakfast, dinner, and all of their drinks, and then the classes themselves each morning. So they're with him a few hours at the start of each day, and then they're kind of on their own in the late afternoon and can do dinner.
There was one student who, this was their 15th Barbecue University, but she had left by the time I got there.
Yeah.
But there was another student who had never barbecued before.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She'd never barbecued before, but she learned a lot during the week.
It's amazing. I think most of the people are crazy barbecue enthusiasts. I think if you're also kind of a beginner, there's enough support around there if you're just wanting to, you know, get your feet wet.
There was a mother, father, and son who were there. There was husbands and wives there, and there were best friends together. And then there were spouses who weren't part of the university but crashed the meal and had a great time.
That's what's nice about having it here, because there's so much to do. So let's say the husband wants to grill all morning and the wife's like, I'm going to go horseback riding, or I'll go wine tasting, or I'll be golfing and I'll meet up with you later. I like that they have it structured that you have half of the day is free. It's still a vacation. You're still getting to have fun and experience all the property has to offer.
And you couldn't eat that much food anyway.
No.
It was a lot of food.
You probably gain 10 pounds when you visit. We love food here at the ranch.
So what else do you know about the logistics? Is it purely F&B driven once people sign up, or is there like an operations manager or something? Who takes over on this side to make sure it happens?
So we assign an event manager. This event becomes their baby. Whenever we do culinary events, our chef becomes really involved. So our chef, and then he normally picks like one or two leads from his team. The culinary team is just in there, prepping the food, getting the grills out. The event manager, though, is the one who's just setting everything up, making sure that it all flows well, executes the event. In addition to that, our concierge is involved. They connect with each guest. Do you want to go horseback riding afterwards? Do you want to golf in the afternoon? So they're the other touch point with the guests.
Is the event manager who is on it here? And the event manager was indeed on site.
Adriana Griego, I'm the senior event manager at Alisal Ranch. I ran the program along with our executive chef and Stephen Reichlin and his director of operations, Craig Reed. We work together. They kind of give me all the pieces, tell me what they want, and I put it all together and make it happen. I book the entertainment. I put it all on paper. I make sure that my culinary team is working with Steven's team and that we're getting everything cohesively together.
How far out do you start?
I think I started planning this program in June for it to be in September. But last year, I started like 6 months in advance because I was our first one. So I wanted to make sure that it kind of went smoothly and we understood everything.
And lots of phone calls and emails?
Lots. We do a lot of Zoom calls. We would do those about once every 2 to 3 weeks. So usually what we do is we set up like action items on one call, and then we'll have a call a couple weeks later that will say, okay, where are we at with these? How many attendees do we have in the class? How do the menus look? Did we order everything? I mostly do the table decor, but I always like to get their idea. I'm making the recipe books. What swag is Steven going to provide for the bags? What is the Alisal going to provide?
How big is your team of people the day before?
The Alisal team, we have our executive chef plus another two chefs that help Steven, our executive steward who handles all of the dishes and getting all the equipment. We've got about four of our front of house servers, bussers, things like that that help. And then Steven's team was a team of four. We had quite a few.
I talked to Chef Eric and he said his whole team starts at 5 o'clock in the morning to prep all the food. What time in the morning do you come in?
It starts at 9. I get there at 8. The front of house team gets there at 6 to lay out all the instruments and equipment and all that. I usually get there at 8, an hour ahead of time, just to make sure that everything looks the way it should, that the flowers are put on the table, check in with Steven and his team to see if they have any questions, because there's always something that comes up the day of, inevitably, that we're kind of working around. But I mean, that's an early start for everyone.
Why didn't I see you on the day? Or did you see me?
You know, I kind of tend to stay in the background. Every hour or so, I'll just do like a loop. I'll just walk around the side. I feel like it's just, especially for this program, there's so many people that are moving around and everything's like, once you start cooking, it's like,
we need the skewers here, and which barbecue to use? And I could not tell you for the life of me what barbecue to use, so I kind of stay out of it. And I just make sure everything looks pretty and everybody knows what they're doing. And so I'll do rounds and I'll check in, but I'm kind of on the periphery.
This is KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. I'm Father Ian Dellinger, and I'm behind the scenes at Barbecue University. The marketing manager, Leah, gets the students to Barbecue University, and now event manager, Adriana, is taking me way back into the behind the scenes and what makes it all happen.
I do a lot of the pre-work, so everything leading up to it. And then the day of, I like to check in and make sure everything looks good. But for the most part, my job hopefully is done and the operations team takes it over at that point.
Do you know Barbecue University by the numbers? Like how many barbecues and how many whatever?
I do, yes.
Okay.
So we have 28 barbecues total, and they range from gas barbecues, smokers, open flat tops, Santa Maria style grills, and charcoal grills, pellet smokers. So ahead of time, I mean, we have to get apple pellets and hickory pellets and charcoal and propane and hickory wood chips and all kinds of things that has to be purchased ahead of time. And then for each team, this year we did teams of six, we have to have like basically two of everything for each person. So tongs, measuring cups, measuring spoons, they get three different kinds of knives, two cutting boards. We have a picture of everything that we do and we have it all broken down in like Excel spreadsheets by this is what we're doing for students' tables and this is for Stevens' tables. And then the back table that you saw with all that additional stuff is like, let's have like two to three of these for people to just come and grab. And then the biggest part is dishwashing. So we have a whole stewarding team that is constantly just cleaning things, which is interesting because, you know, we're a little remote. So we have kind of a satellite dishwashing station out there because we constantly have to clean it for the next person to use. It has to be kitchen standards of sanitized.
What about the infrastructure? He projects himself on a TV. Mm-hmm. There was Wi-Fi.
We have this really great guy. He comes in. He does pretty much everything. He sets up the screens. We want the students to be able, who are even sitting in the back, to see everything that's happening. So he's got a camera over Steven's workstation and it's projecting onto the screens. He's got his Wi-Fi. He brings his own generator. There's not a lot of power out there. We have some, but not enough to manage the food processors and the blenders and the TVs. So he brings his own generator. He brings his own, what we call their MiFis. They're project Wi-Fi at any location from satellite. He's got all that out there. And then we do have a barbecue. We've got a whole back station with a little sink back there. We have lights that are already built in. Not that you need them in the morning, but we've pretty much got everything that we can run it like an indoor venue. The only thing is the transit time. So it takes a little bit longer to get all of the food, which is why we actually had a refrigeration truck out there that we had running through a generator so that each day we put it out there really early and then everything could stay. So we're not constantly running back to the kitchen for things that we need from a refrigerator.
So this sounds like a lot of work. What is one highlight for you for Barbecue University?
As the person who helped run the program, I just really enjoyed how much smoothly it ran smoothly last year to the guest on the front end. But this year it was so much smoother for us because we understood it and we knew how it went. And just Steven and his team are so great. They help so much with everything. And just seeing people get really into the cooking and really excited about what they're doing is really fun. It's a fun, funny experience. People that don't know each other, they've never met before, and now they're working as a team. They go and sit together at dinner. There's some single people that come and, you know, you never see them sitting alone in the dining room because they've made friends with their team members. And I think that's the most fun part. And then for us, it's really great because Steven, he is such a big name and everybody knows him. So that also brings a lot of publicity to the ranch, which is really great.
You know, the slap the head emoji?
Yes.
Okay. What was one of those for this year's Barbecue University for you?
Ooh, let's see. There's always one. Last year it was that we forgot to order a generator for the refrigeration truck, but we got it in time. This year, I think the one I would say is... Oh, you know, I don't know that if I have one. Last year we had a couple. Then we ordered all the equipment because we hadn't had it before. And then we had to take the stickers off of every single piece of equipment times like 1,000. That was really fun too. But you know, this year, I don't think I had one. I think it went really, really smoothly. I think, well, I guess the only thing I could think of is we thought maybe we should have scheduled the guests to have dinner together in the dining room because we would set all these individual tables. And then it was kind of a fire sale when people come in and they're like, actually, I want to sit with this person because they're my friend from the team. So we're like, you know, maybe we should just set up kind of feasting tables, communal tables for people to sit together because it made it a little bit of a push during dinner. I mean, we worked it out, but that's what I would say. I think this year was pretty smooth. Last year, there was definitely several of those moments.
Are you ready for next year?
I am very ready. I feel so much more confident about the program this year, having done it twice, and I think it's just getting better. I mean, we sold the room so fast, and everybody seemed so happy. And now Steven and I kind of know each other's work style, and we have this really great chef who's super used to it. So I think it's going to be just only raise in success.
I asked her if it was all F&B or food and beverage department driven. So now it's time to find out just how much F&B has to do to make Barbecue U happen.
My name is Eric Sandvin. I'm the executive chef here at the Owl Sol Ranch. My role during this period is to make sure everyone has what they need. They're having a good time. We have all the equipment in working order, making sure we have all the ingredients on hand. We have to go through all of Steven's recipes, make sure we have all the ingredients here that the students need, in addition to some additional ingredients and equipment lists. I'm just making sure that everyone has what they need for it to be a successful program.
Is it just the food side, or do you do the equipment side as well?
I have a gentleman, Chris Jackson. He's our executive steward. He works for me, and he takes care of all the equipment for us.
I got here at 7 o'clock this morning, and all of the ingredients were laid out at all of the six stations. Is that under you? Is that your job?
Yes, I have a team of gentlemen that knocked that work out for me. We went through all the recipes yesterday for today. We went through and measured everything out for the students, separated it out into batches, one per team. And then this morning we got in at 6 o'clock, and we started pulling it all out of the refrigerator and dropping it on the stations for the students. It took two cooks and one chef.
That's a lot of work, and that's a lot of prep. How fun, exciting, or daunting is Barbecue University for you?
It's really exciting to see all these cooks that are, you know, used to cooking at home. They've never worked in a professional kitchen before, but they're having a lot of fun, and they're really knocking it out and, you know, having a blast with all these fancy grills we have out here.
And what's your personal experience with barbecuing?
I've been barbecuing since I was a little boy. I spent a lot of time with my dad when I was living back east, and we would fire up the barbecue every weekend and grill stuff up together. I spent the majority of my career working in, you know, luxury hotel restaurant kitchens, so I was really happy to have the opportunity to come to Owl Sol Ranch and get to play around with the barbecue a little bit more.
As the executive chef of Owl Sol, do you guys do barbecues for your clients?
We do. In the summer season, we close our dining room every Saturday, and we do what we call a grand barbecue. We also offer rodeo barbecues and lake deck barbecues throughout the summer.
What's a rodeo barbecue?
The guests get to come out and enjoy a little rodeo out here at our rodeo arena, and then we pull them aside afterwards and we have a tri-tip barbecue waiting for them.
In your great double Santa Maria style barbecue built-in extravaganza here.
Yes, we have Santa Maria grills all over the property. So I have these two down here at the rodeo grounds. We have five more that are mobile. We can tow around anywhere. We also have a Santa Maria grill at the lake, as well as the old adobe at the top of the hill over here.
Fantastic. The head chef mentioned the support of the chief steward. Let's find out what he does.
My name is Chris Jackson. I am the executive steward here at the Owl Sol Guest Ranch. I have been watching Barbecue University for decades, it feels like. It used to come on after America's Test Kitchen. And so I would stick around and watch the show. And when he decided to bring Barbecue University here, I said, oh, that's something I have to be part of. I just couldn't be more excited to work with him because he has such a vast knowledge base and he's such an artist. Just being around him and watching him create and watching him guide the students in the class, it's just magic to be around.
You found out that he was coming here. Were you already working with Owl Sol?
Yeah, so last year, I was in a culinary program in Hawaii, so I was in the kitchen, and I was actually the onstage help for him last year. So that's how I sort of got involved with it. I was working in the kitchen here part-time, and then last year's event was the kickoff. I've been promoted since then, and so now I work as the executive steward. I manage all of the materials for this event. So as you can see, there's a lot of table stuff. There's a lot going on. We have to have all kinds of equipment out here, which is a challenge because our kitchen's a quarter mile away. So we're doing all of this al fresco out here in the rodeo arena. Somebody has to be on all of the materials. So I've moved out of the kitchen and into an adjacent department. And so with all of the barbecues that we have, I think 35 of them out here right now, somebody needs to be in charge of the charcoal and the gas and the spoons and the gloves and all of the tongs and all of the things that you need to keep barbecuing safe for a group of this size.
What time did you start this morning?
5:30 last week. Yeah, right. We have been prepping and planning. I've got some 16-hour days ahead of me. It's a labor of love to make sure the event goes off without a hitch, because this is really special. Anytime you're doing live fire cooking, there's kind of just an excitement around it. So that kind of helps get me up. The day four in a row was a little bit of a challenge, but look at this. This is what we get to do. Sunshine, the morning. It's just breathtaking to be out here at this kind of event, so I wouldn't miss it for the world.
So I haven't been here the other days, and I actually haven't seen Barbecue University on TV, so yeah. Don't tell Steven. won't. Is it all just fantastic food at the end of the day, or there's some barbecue disasters?
There's never a barbecue disaster. There's only like unique cooking methods. So we are students here. We are having a good time. Occasionally you learn a really good way not to make a recipe, and that's just as valuable here. And especially with all of the grills, you're not going to have access to something like this anywhere else. We have a $35,000 Kalamazoo grill over there, and then we have a $60 oil drum pit barbecue over here. So you get to really figure out what kind of technique works on each apparatus, and then which one suits your personal style. So we get to watch the students pop from one grill to the other. And occasionally they'll come to us in a panic and sweating and, my stuff is on fire. How do you turn down the grill? And you're like, well, you kind of just don't. You got to open it up and wait for it to cool down on its own. And then when the grill is ready, then you make the recipe. So we always got to kind of hang loose here.
Then I bumped into one of the most interesting roles at BBQ U.
My name is Jared Ryder, and I'm Steven's social media manager and one of his fire wranglers.
Fire wrangler?
Yes, here at Barbecue University and at the filming of his TV shows. I help prepare the grills and wrangle the fires so that they're nice and hot and ready to go for whatever the recipes are calling for, and so that our guests at Barbecue University and on the shows, when he needs something ready to go, the fires are nice and hot for him.
Have you ever had a fire that wasn't ready, and have you ever had a fire that was out of control?
The latter, yes. Sometimes things flare up and grease fires catch, and not really here at Barbecue University, more so on the show. Our backstage grill kind of gets overused and caught fire once. That's why you have some fire wranglers to tackle that and get it out quickly and rescue the grill.
What's the backstage grill?
So that's more so for the shows. On camera, Steven has a grill out there, and then backstage, he'll have a similar grill doing the same meal. So just in case he burns it, we got one going. Or if it's a long cook, we'll have it prepped beforehand so that we can just have a camera ready when it's time to shoot. But here at Barbecue University, we have 50 grills out. They're all going and there's nothing going on backstage. All the teams, all the students are prepping and cooking and grilling themselves.
And the last thing, and the most important to me, is food waste. Each team of 6 barbecuers prepared a full 8-dish meal for 6 people. There was a lot of food. I don't like wasting food, which you would have picked up on the Playing with Food episode about the anaerobic biodigester that produces electricity from our food waste. Head chef calmed my fears. So there's a lot of food here. It all looks wonderful and plentiful, and everyone's about ready to dig in. What happens to the leftovers?
We actually have refrigeration over here at the rodeo grounds, so all the leftovers that are in the trailer are going back to be repurposed in one of our 4 dining outlets on property, as well as our employee dining room. We do have an employee dining room here on property that feeds over 400 employees, so we do use leftovers to facilitate that as well.
That's absolutely fantastic. And then he mentioned breakfast this morning.
Breakfast this morning. We had some leftover brisket from yesterday's event, so we turned that into a little hash for our staff meal this morning.
And that's what it takes to put on a full-blown Barbecue University, a fire-filled Playing with Food. This is Issues and Ideas on KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. I'm Father Ian with a triple portion of Playing with Food this holiday season, or maybe it's a 3-course episode. Our first course was Barbecue University at Alice Hall Ranch outside of Solvang. Our second course was behind the scenes of Barbecue U and what's required to host a celebrity chef and his class of 40 students with just as many barbecue grills. And our third and final course is the man, the myth, the legend himself, the author of the Barbecue Bible and the creator of Barbecue University, Stephen Reichlin. How did you get to the barbecue part?
Like most people with a Y chromosome, I felt and thought that I was born knowing how to grill. But just to quickly resume, French Lit major at Reed College in Portland, Oregon, and I chose to write my thesis on a medieval poet named Christine de Pizan, who was Europe's first feminist. And while I was doing my research, I came across a medieval English cookbook called The Form of Curry, written in Middle English. Blew my mind. Okay, the thought that people were writing cookbooks 800 years ago. And so that gave me the idea to propose to study medieval cooking in Europe to the Watson Foundation. And much to my great astonishment, they gave me $7,000, which in 1976 was a lot of money to eat and drink my way through Europe. At the Lovren Cooking School, the founder of the school named Ann Willen, and she said, "You know, Stephen, you'll never earn a living writing cookbooks." Well, the gauntlet was thrown down, and I was determined to earn a living writing cookbooks. It took me 5 cookbooks that didn't sell much to write my first bestseller, which is a book called Miami Spice about the New Floridian cuisine. So I wrote about Caribbean tropical cuisine for a while. I was a restaurant critic for Boston Magazine, developed a cholesterol problem. This was before the advent of Lipitor. So I came up with a style of cooking called high flavor, low fat, wrote 8 books in that series. Then Lipitor came out. And with the barbecue, it was one of those crazy flashes that happens in a lifetime that changes your direction. And it was as though I heard a voice that said, follow the fire. Sort of a very simple but simultaneously profound realization. Grilling is the world's oldest and most universal cooking method, but everywhere it's done differently. So I thought, wouldn't it be neat to travel around the world, document how people grill in different cultures? I dashed off a book proposal to my publisher, had a contract a week later, and then was that, oh my God, what have I done? How on earth am I going to do this project? At any rate, I started traveling. Whenever I write a new book, first thing I do is I pack a suitcase. I visited, for that book, 25 countries. A book that was supposed to be 100 recipes and take a year to write, mushroomed to 537 recipes. Took 4 years to write, but finally came out as the Barbecue Bible. It was the right book at the right time, and it became an international bestseller. And that's how I got into barbecue.
But how did this guy with a French lit degree become the barbecue hero and not the pitmasters of America?
So what about all those people from the South, from Kansas City, from St. Louis? This guy from...
I was born in Japan, raised in Baltimore, and at the time living in Miami, which does not have a barbecue tradition.
Right. So have you heard from some of the bigger pit masters and had any criticism or accolades from them about you doing barbecue and they get on the sidelines?
Well, Barbecue Bible was about global barbecuing and grilling, and that's really my beat. After Barbecue Bible came out, you know, like I said, right book, right time, really exploded. Then I thought a little bit more systematically about, well, what else should I write about barbecue? Because what I love about this field of barbecue and grilling is it's both extremely broad, right? It's done virtually in every culture around the world, and extremely deep, meaning that there's so many aspects you could write about. You could write about the techniques, and that became my book, How to Grill. You could focus on smoking, and that became my book, Project Smoke. You could focus on one particular meat, like brisket, and that became my book, The Brisket Chronicles. Well, for the American pitmaster guys, and honestly, I never got any trash talk or negative talk. Maybe people were just so overwhelmed by the heft of Barbecue Bible, since it was really the first book in its field, people gave me a pass. But anyway, in my editorial project, the third book I wrote was a book called BBQ USA, and that was my love song to American barbecue. And for that book, I traveled around, I visited all 50 states, interviewed all of the legendary pitmasters. I mean, I'm a writer. Look, I can handle myself around a grown smoker. My food is pretty good, but I am not a world champion barbecue master. But I did interview the world champion barbecue masters and stood by their side while they created their masterpieces.
You said, ultimately, you're a writer, so you are telling the story of the barbecuers who are around you and came before you.
Exactly. Not only in the United States, but literally around the world. And it's everybody from a famous guy like Francis Malman in Uruguay and Argentina, or Peter Eckerlich in Belgium, like the woman on the street corner in Hanoi who was grilling eggs over a tire rim, like a tandoori master in India, a satay master in Indonesia. These are all, in a way, my heroes, whether they're famous or not, and they've all generously shared their knowledge, which has enabled me to write my books and have this.
You're listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX Public Radio. I'm Father Ian, and I'm at Barbecue University at Alisal Ranch in the San Ynez Valley. Creator Stephen Reichlin just recounted his personal history with barbecue. Let's go back to this, and this being Barbecue U.
Barbecue University. This is a well-oiled grilling machine, and they're going to do 7 complicated dishes in an hour and a half, and it's all going to be delicious. And there's no such thing as a mistake in the kitchen, just a new recipe waiting to be discovered.
How did you come up with this concept and this format?
My, I guess, paradigm for teaching, I majored in French literature in college, which may seem like an odd background for a career in barbecue. But after college, I won a Thomas J. Watson Foundation Fellowship to study medieval cooking in Europe. So already that was sort of the writing, the mind, the intellectual part. and the hands-on part. Because while I was reading these medieval cookery manuscripts, they typically went take this, that, and the other and combine in the customary fashion. Well, I didn't know what the customary fashion was. So I went to two modern French cooking schools in Paris, the Cordon Bleu and La Varenne. And at La Varenne, I became kind of the head translator, and our chefs were French, our students were American, so I would do the translating. But my two passions in life are cooking and writing, so hence this large library of cookbooks that I've written, but also teaching. You know, writing is a very solitary activity, and teaching is a bit social.
I see that you started this back in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Has it evolved, or did you get the format right the first time?
It's actually evolved, and this is our fourth location, fabulous location. And it used to be that the students would, first of all, the groups would make only one dish, not the whole meal. And then we used to have the hotel prepare the food in the background to serve to the students. But we found the students really wanted to taste the food that they cooked. So now they actually cook their own lunch, eat their own lunch. They do the entire meal. You know, we learn new things every year. This year we have every group gets a page called marching orders and tells them not only what to make, but what sequence, right? Because you want to get the beer can chickens and the matambres on first. They take the longest to cook. We also tell them what grills to use. Obviously, we're learning recipes, but we're really learning principles. And the first day we go over the five methods of live fire cooking, the three windows of opportunity for adding flavor, the eight tests for doneness, because there's a lot of technical stuff you need to learn about barbecuing and grilling. I want people to be able to learn how to use every imaginable grill and smoker on the market. So we've got $300 kettle grills, and we've got a $28,000 stainless steel gas super Kalamazoo grill. We have Kamado cookers, we have Big Green Eggs, we've got gas grills, we have a Kudu, which is a wood-burning grill, and the students rotate between them, so everybody gets a chance to try it. Maybe some of our students are thinking, well, you know, do I want a pellet grill, or do I want a gas grill or a charcoal grill? Well, here at Barbecue University, they get to try them out and see what works. You asked sort of what's evolved over the years. The general knowledge level and skill level of our students has just leaped over the last 20 years. Used to be, I'd say, how many people own a grill? Most did, not everybody. And now, how many people own three grills, four grills, smokers?
Do you attribute that increase in skill level over the last 20 years to your own TV shows?
I would like to think that my 33 books and my five TV series on public television have helped.
I was watching your show with my brother-in-law, and there was this type of barbecue that had, it looked like stainless steel additions that were kind of plancha-like, but you put it over. It was like a very versatile thing. You could grill or you could plancha, and it was round. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, the art flame.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah. The technical name for those are braseros. If you imagine sort of a flat top mushroom, the mushroom part is usually a ring of seasoned carbon steel with a hole in the center with a grill grate over it. So you move the food to the center, you're cooking over live fire. You move it to the periphery and you're griddling over hot metal. And those are more and more prevalent now.
This is KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. I'm Father Ian, and I'm at Barbecue University at Allisall Ranch with its creator, PBS barbecue hero Stephen Reichlin. Having been born on the Central Coast, and when growing up between parents, I lived in Santa Maria during barbecue season. But folks from other parts of the U.S. diss the Santa Maria-style barbecue, so I just had to point out the elephant on the rotisserie. But first, Stephen's theory on the history of barbecue and smoking meat.
I believe a forest fire swept through the woods, caught an auroch or a prehistoric horse. Homo erectus came and tasted and uttered the first grunt of gastronomic pleasure in human history, set us on our evolutionary course to modern man. But how did smoking happen, right? I'm imagining prehistoric man sitting around a campfire, right? Probably a smoky campfire. At some point, somebody notices there are fewer flies and mosquitoes downwind of the smoke. So maybe somebody took a strip of raw meat and hung it on a stick downwind of the smoke to keep the bugs off of it. Not only did it keep the bugs off, but somebody tasted and said, hey, smoked meat? This is awesome. And I really believe that's how smoking happened.
That is a very plausible theory.
Yeah.
Barbecue. So long story, but I grew up in two different places. During barbecue season, I lived here. My understanding of barbecue is Santa Maria style barbecue. Right. I don't really like barbecue sauce. I'm not a sugar and vinegar person, right. So I don't really like barbecue sauce. But all of my friends from the Midwest, people I meet from the South, they come here and they're like, that's not barbecue.
Right.
And then they can't really tell me what barbecue is. But they can only say, that's not barbecue. You've been around the world and you said to me, everywhere around the world barbecues and it's all different. So what is the definition of barbecue?
We start this class with the definition of barbecue on the first day, and it's really five things. So first of all, it's a piece of equipment, the so-called barbecue grill, and that's where our word barbecue comes from. It's an Arawak Indian term, meaning a platform made of sticks positioned over a fire on which you can smoke grill foods. Barbecue is a technique, as in grilling is a hot, fast cooking method where you cook tender, quick cooking foods directly over the fire. That's grilling. True barbecue is a low, slow, indirect method. That's where your big offset barrel smokers come in. You're cooking next to the fire. You're cooking a much lower heat, always in the presence of wood smoke. So that's a technique. The third thing might be dishes. Ask somebody from Santa Maria what's barbecue, they're going to say tri-tip. Ask somebody from Kansas City, they're going to say ribs. Texas, they're going to say brisket. Decatur, Alabama, they're going to say barbecue chicken with white barbecue sauce. And so on. And you go around the world, you know, Indonesia, it would be satay. India, it would be tandoori. Argentina, it would be asado. So barbecue is a whole giant repertory of dishes. Barbecue is also a meal cooked and eaten outdoors. And finally, it's a social celebration. I mean, let's stage a barbecue. In America's political history, when we won the Revolutionary War, barbecues took place throughout the 13 colonies to celebrate our victory. So one of the things that's kept me so consistently fascinated by the field is that it means so many things.
A true gentleman and a scholar, Stephen really must be my long-lost twin. Not only do we share a pragmatism about what is barbecue, we also utilize the barbecue for everything. Just as the students were starting their homework, Stephen brought over some samples, and we discussed barbecuing everything.
So these are the eggs done on the barbecue?
Grilled eggs, yes. Okay. Breakfast eggs.
What I liked about them is that there's a lot of cream.
Yeah. People don't usually think of barbecue for breakfast, but I'm an early riser, and here at Barbecue University, we cook every meal on the grill, even breakfast, even dessert.
Have you done uncracked eggs?
Yes. That is a dish that you find in Vietnam. I remember the grill mistress, little tiny woman, and her grill was actually the rim of an automobile wheel. She had it filled with charcoal, little grate on top, and she put eggs in the shell on the grill and roasted them in the shell on the grill. Then they were cut open. The egg was served in a lettuce leaf with chilies, fresh mint, basil, cilantro, nyok cham, dipping sauce. Absolutely fantastic.
What I've kind of overheard from your students and from your class today is that you taught them this week that you can do everything on the grill.
Everything on the grill. From appetizers to desserts, from breakfast to dinner to midnight snack. If it exists, you can grill it. We've grilled foods that seemingly you would never imagine you could grill. Smoked ice cream, grilled sushi. Well, that you make sushi and then you hit it with a blowtorch, so.
For a long time, I've been doing everything on the grill. I'm not an expert. I'm not like one-upping you, right? But I've done everything on the grill. And people look at me like, how can you do dessert on the grill? So how I do dessert on the grill is find some fruit. I'll put it in the bottom of a pan with butter. And then I'll do like a crumble on top. And then when everything's done on the barbecue, depending on how hot the coals are, I'll move them around. And I put it on there, close the lid, we go have our meal. Then somebody says, oh, what about dessert? And I'll go and I'll be like, oh, look, it's done. Yeah. Is that how you do it?
Absolutely. Yesterday we did a strawberry rhubarb crisp made very much the way you describe, with a ginger snap pecan crumble on top. And it was smoke roasted, right? So you add the element of smoke, and smoke, you know, it's sort of the umami of barbecue, and it really pumps up the flavor. Today, we're doing the pepper grilled pineapple. And Wednesday, what was our dessert on?
Yesterday?
No, the day before, the first day.
Salt slab chocolate
brownie s'mores. So those were indirect grilled on a salt slab, brownie on the bottom, fresh mint leaves, homemade marshmallows on top. Of course, bittersweet chocolate in between, cooked just until the marshmallows melted. And that was pretty fab too.
I don't have a sweet tooth and often pass on dessert, but I would have some of that. Stephen knows that he has the best job on the planet, but we also share, again, long lost twins, we share a belief that barbecue goes far deeper than the gut.
You know, I've got the best job on the planet.
I would love to do that. I spent half of my sabbatical last year looking at Christian-specific foods, which is a very, very hard thing to do, and I actually needed an extra year and funding to do the research, but I didn't, so I just went around the world and looked at stuff, and it was an amazing adventure, and I just thought, if I could do this for a living, it'd be great.
Yeah. Well, you're on your way. Actually, I want to have a conversation about that with you, because I think a lot about fire myths and anthropology and the birth of barbecue and how it leapfrogged human evolution, you know, by eating cooked meat and the mastery of fire. And lately, I've been thinking about fire myths in various religions and cultures. I actually interviewed my local rabbi. I think it's the book of Leviticus that has all the rules about animal sacrifice. And interestingly, in Judaism, there isn't a fire myth the way there is in ancient Greek mythology or in Zoroastrianism. But in the Jewish Torah, there's an awful lot of animal sacrifice and a lot of grilling and almost grilling, starting with Abraham and Isaac. And I'm trying to think in the New Testament, I know there are a lot of loaves and fishes. I don't actually remember a lot of grilling or live fire cooking. So.
There is. At the end of one of the Gospels, Jesus appears to the disciples post-resurrection, and they're on the beach, and they grill some fish and have breakfast on the beach.
All right. You got to get me the chapter and verse number.
I'll get you the citation.
That's John 21, 4-14. In chatting with Stephen throughout BBQU, one might forget that he's a celebrity. But when I did remember, I had to find out if he was a TV natural.
I'm assuming that the Barbecue Bible was what launched you into the media. What was it like adjusting to television?
It was painful. I was terrible. And I'll tell you a funny story about it. So my first appearance on TV, Good Morning America called me. They wanted me to come on 3 days in a row to talk about the book called High Flavor, Low Fat. And I was so green and so dumb that I actually asked them, well, how much are you paying? And they said $1,000. And I said, is that for 1 day or threes? Bottom line, I was so stupid that I'm probably the only person in history that ever got paid to appear on Good Morning America. Well, then ensued panic because I'm a writer. I think in sentences and paragraphs. And when I face a glass lens, I freeze up like a clam. I did a media training, which helped a little bit. But my first TV series, they would go 3-2-1 action and I would be, I couldn't think. I couldn't speak. If I made even one mistake, I'd have to start over because when you're a writer, you go back, edit. I would say it took me a good 4 years to get comfortable in front of a camera. Much more comfortable today. I still wouldn't say I'm a natural. I think a natural looks at the TV lens and assumes they're talking to another person. For me, it always remains a TV lens. But over the years and having done 20 years of TV shows, I've kind of learned some workarounds. But it was not a pretty sight, the first show.
And while we're on the subject of him being a celebrity chef, I had to share my observation.
Looking at other television male chefs and barbecue, they tend to be macho and somewhat aggressive. You're super nice. You're super nice on your television show, in your class. When I was here early and you were working with your staff to get everything ready and making sure everything was ready, I hope you don't take this as a slight because I think it's an ultimate compliment. To me, you're like the Bob Ross of barbecue. Is that just who you are?
You know, I always joke that nobody gets cursed out or kicked off of my TV show. It's not my style. First of all, my staff is here to support this effort and they're working really hard to do it. My students are here because they want to learn. They enable me to have the greatest job on the planet, ditto for my readers. So I think you get further in life being kind rather than being angry.
And finally, Stephen has a philosophy of barbecue.
I guess I've learned sort of philosophically that no matter where we come from on the political spectrum, you put people together around the grill and they become friends. Barbecue has great ambassadorial powers, and if we could just all get together around a grill, maybe some of our divisions would disappear.
A day at Barbecue University was an absolute privilege, even if it was 108 degrees. The setting was perfect and beautiful. The setup was conducive to learning. The subject matter was mouthwatering. The teaching was superb. The food was fantastic. And it was right here on the Central Coast. And I got to meet a celebrity chef. I hope you enjoyed your three-course episode of Playing with Food. And happy holidays. This is KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Father Ian, and I'm Playing with Food.